Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Happy to have you with us. But first, I want to tell you about one of the sponsors we have here on the show. The NFL draft is one of the most anticipated days of any football fan's calendar, and that also means fantasy football season is not too far behind. DynastySportsEmpire.com is going to change the way you play fantasy football. DSE offers fantasy football gamers of all skill levels an opportunity to draft and retain your well-maintained rosters and players for their entire NFL career. Highlighted with large rosters, high-scoring games, easy payouts, and an amazing online community, DSE has everything you would want in a challenging online experience. Please visit them online today at DynastySportsEmpire.com. That's DynastySportsEmpire.com. And check out all the amazing upcoming formats for this upcoming fantasy football season. Go check them out. We got a great episode for you today, so let's get to it.
Hey, this is Maya Sharp, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. This is an interesting starting point because Mike just stopped and he said he had to go free his cat. I'm not sure where the cat went, but oh, Mike is here. Mike, how was your cat freeing mission? I decided to start without you.
Yes, I heard it over the earphones as I was getting ready, so I was prepared for that. She is fine. All that happened was one of her scratching posts. I guess she used it enough where it got in front of her cat door from the garage into the man cave. So I just moved it over so she can come in and join the hilariousness that is Verbal Shenanigans.
So it's only a matter of minutes before we see her tail coming across your face and...
No.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It has no tail. Well, I'm glad he or she. Is he a he or a she?
She.
I'm glad
she. My entire house is females and me. I'm outnumbered.
Arguably four females. You know, it's
such a low hanging fruit you went there, buddy. I thought you were a comedian.
If you think that I'm not going to take the lowest of hanging fruit, you don't know me by now. This is not highbrow humor people tune in for. Yeah. Considering last week, the phones have been ringing off the hook for more dehumidifier water talk. They were like, you know what, a half hour straight wasn't enough. Could you guys do a whole hour, maybe a series on it?
Scott, I got so many emails that they were angry we cut to Joe Bob Briggs when we were in the middle of our humidifier water talk. They're like... What has that man done being on television for three decades where you would stop that conversation?
We did get some, I got a couple people pretty excited about the Joe Bob Briggs episode. Some of his fans, I guess, were pretty excited that we had him on. So
the Briggy boys,
the Brigade, I think they call themselves.
That wasn't
low hanging fruit. That was high thinking right there. You
went up the tree, Scott. Like you were the Brennan Orchards was just like pick everything off the ground. That day you're like, wait a minute, I'm gonna try this stepladder.
I feel like everything you say is almost like a business. Like Brennan Orchards sounds like another business pitch. Like Brennan Orchards, where we grow. Like I'm back at my battle with growing grass again. Last year was like, I think I planted grass like four times and most of it died. So we're back at that disaster again. So I don't know if Brennan Orchards is the right move for me business wise.
Listen, we got one thing covered. No, we got plenty of grass here at Brennan Orchards. Now don't look for apples because we've been screwing that up for the last 10 years.
Right,
but
now
you can pick as much grass as you want. You pay by the pound. But it'll be worth it. It'll be the freshest grass you ever ate.
Yeah, like if you saw my grass last year, it looked like people came and picked the grass. Like, we're low on stock here. The finest blades have been picked by our
customers. The biggest problem is those people that, like, you're like, you have the honor system where you're like, all right, every blade of grass you pick, you put it in the basket, and then you're watching him out there. Hey, you ate 5 strands of grass. You owe me for that.
I'm
putting that on your bill.
I was always a pretty good kid. Like, were you ever the guy who, like on Halloween when there was the bucket, did you ever, like, dump the whole bucket into your pillowcase and, like, run off?
No, I was pretty good with that. I don't remember various scenarios of where I had the opportunity in doing it. I do recall, like, the last time I ever went trick-or-treating, like, me and some guys went out. We didn't even have, like, costumes. We were like,
I was just going to say, there's always that, yeah, like, those last 2 years of your trick-or-treating career that are kind of awkward where you're like, are we too old for this? And you just, like, put on a sports jersey and you're like, I'm a hockey player.
Yeah, we were, like, walking around. We weren't even, like, going to every house. But I kind of remember, like, I remember seeing a lady, like, about to get in her car. And as a joke, I screamed, trick-or-treat. And she actually, like, closed her car door and ran into the house to get something. I'm like, well, now I got to take her candy.
So that's where your career of just scaring innocent people started.
No, she came out with candy. She didn't call the cops. I mean, she was just...
Get away! Take it! Get away!
Like, she was probably, like, ready to go to some store. She's like, I gotta go. I'll be right back. This is like my one opportunity. And then, like, the second year, trick or treat, she's like, damn it. I can't ruin these kids' Halloween. Yeah. Have to go in and get those bite sized Kit Kats.
Yeah, I never had, like, the brashness to dump, like, the whole bowl in my pillowcase and go. And I remember, like, the last couple years of Halloween, it was just like one kid would, like, take the colored spray and, like, spray his hair green or something like that. He'd be like, oh, that's my costume. The next kid would put on his, like, football jersey. He'd be like, oh, that's my costume. The other kid would bust out, like, a scream mask he had in his room. It gets real lazy towards the end. It's kind of like, oh, I think we're done with this.
Yeah, it's one of those. You want to hang out with your friends and you don't mind getting the candy, but at the same time, you're like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
you're on the fence and you just, like, only go to, like, 8 or 10 houses. And in the end, you're just like, all right. All the career.
Yeah, it's weird when, like, you're competing for the same candy as, like, a little girl dressed as Moana and, like, Buzz Lightyear, and you're, like, in the same line as them. It's not...
Well, I'm used to that with my wife. You know what I mean, that's a Tuesday, so...
Yeah, what are you talking about? Your Halloween career is exploding right now. It's basically on a daily basis.
Well, I'm not going house to house with it.
Yet.
That, like, I'm going to special occasions where it's like, all right, I could somewhat fit in, and Scott's only going to rag on me.
Yeah, like when you are, like, kind of, like, shoving kids out of the way to get the same candy, it's like, it's time to hang up the Disney, I mean, the Halloween career. I stopped around 14, 15, I think was probably the end.
Yeah, I think it was around that range. You know, it's probably around, like, well, what is 14? That's around junior high, right?
14 would be, like, the border of the end of middle school, beginning of high school.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of, like, the time you're just, like, and it's like when you get that candy, you turn around, you just see, like, 4-year-olds behind you, like, waiting for you, or you're kind of like, well, what am I doing with myself here? I'm close enough to the age where I can get a job to just buy the candy. So.
yeah. And then, like, by that age, you're so specific on which candy you even like. Like, there's really no fun left in the game at that point.
Yeah. When you get to the age where you get a bad candy and you're ready to just, like, chew out the person who gave it to you, you're too old.
Yeah. Like, when you're younger, you kind of put the candy in, like, a hierarchy. Like, okay, first I'm going to blast through the Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And then the second tier, you know, maybe it's, like, your Three Muskets. And then you, like... You get down to where there's just, like, Tootsie Rolls and a couple Charleston Chews in the bottom. You're like, well, I guess I got to eat these. And then eventually your mom's just like, all right, the candy's gone.
See, I don't mind those two at the bottom that you just said. It's when you get to, like, the Smarties, those powdered candies.
I like Smarties.
That's when you're like, it's like, no. And, like, that's something where it's like, even as you put it in your mouth, you're like, why am I doing this? What is the purpose? Do I really need sugar this badly?
Yeah.
And I was a fat kid, so when I'm saying it, it's a bad candy.
Did you and, like, your siblings, like, sit down for the post-trick-or-treating, like, trade-off, like the sale, essentially?
No, because you forget, my sister was 9 years older than me. My brother was 7 years older than me. So there was, number one, like, my brother didn't want any part of me to begin with as a child. So much like now, but I digress. But yeah, they were just at their own ages. Like, they come home, it's like, I got mine. And it's just like, oh, I went to 8 houses. It's like, shut up, little kid.
Yeah, I guess I was in the middle of my siblings where, like, my older brother ripped me off for 4 years, but then I had my younger sister to rip off for 4 years. So we were 4 years apart. I was right in the middle. So I got a little
Were you, like, just, like, stealing from them? Were you, like, making, like, trades where you're like, I'll give you this one Butterfinger for like 20 of your Kit Kats kind of deal?
Yeah, it was like, say my brother liked Butterfinger and I liked Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. We tried to wheel and deal, you know. I'm sure he got the upper hand. He probably outsmarted me. But in the end, I don't think I ever like finished all my Halloween candy. It always comes a point where you're like, ugh. Like, and my mom would just be like, all right, we're chucking this bowl of crap, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you finish your sack, you either had a really bad night or you're just really desperate. Like, or maybe you're just like, well, I don't know what's for dinner, so I'm just finishing off my Smarties.
Yeah. I don't know. We had a lot of things as a kid that seemed straight. Like, I was talking the other day. Do you remember? I don't know. Did your family have a van at any point?
My no-legged gay uncle before he had no legs.
You know, you could call him like Uncle Steve or whatever his name was.
Jimmy. It was Jim.
You don't always have to preface that he was gay and had no leg.
Well, I figure if once they say Uncle Jimmy, the next question would be, was that the no-legged gay uncle or was that the one letting firecrackers off in his hand? So I just figure I would just say, this is the person who's defined by.
You're just being very efficient. You're maximizing airtime, so there's no more questions.
I don't want our audience going, which uncle, Mike? Which uncle?
See, I'm picturing like he came over for Christmas and you're like, guys, it's one-legged gay Uncle Jimmy. You know, like you have to preface who he was every single time. He's like, all right, I get it, guys.
Yeah, mom got mad when we started doing that, so we had to stop it.
Yeah, well, you're writing out the tags for your presents, like, to mom, to dad, to one-legged gay Jimmy.
And then it got weird. It's like, all right, now he's, like, religious one-legged Jimmy. And then it's like, no-legged religious Jimmy. And then it's like, rest in peace, Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah, we had, a 90s caravan, maybe late 80s. It was the caravan that, like, every family had back then. It's like a box. It was like 2 front seats, and then there was a bucket seat in the back. And like every road trip, like, I don't know what brought this up, but I was thinking about like every road trip or vacation, like, you know, air conditioning barely worked. And it would be the three of us always on one bucket seat, packed to the rafters with suitcases. And I just remember everybody would like go through a period of getting car sick. Like so much so that my mom would pack like this orange bucket, like a plastic bucket, and like that was the puke bucket. And it was like, you know, oh, mom, I'm not feeling well, here's the bucket. Like, and it feels like the whole family got a chance to take a Ralph into the plastic tub.
So it was like a rite of passage.
Right. It was like a family heirloom. Yeah. Like, I'm hoping that, like, you know, when my parents go one day, that's in the will. You know, that I finally get the orange puke bucket.
Like, I would love a scenario where, like, Shay is, like, 8 years old. And he's like, Dad, we've been driving for 4 hours. And he's like, we're going to drive for another 4 until you use the bucket, young man.
Get puking, right? Baby. Get puking. Let's go.
If you want that Brennan Crest, you must take the puke.
Dad, we passed Lake George 3 hours ago. Why are we still going?
I just see you like stopping off at like a Waffle House and like, all right, I want the 3 large plates and give it all to him. I want every greasy thing. I want every dirty thing. You don't have to wash the silverware. I want people to leave the bathroom door open while they're using it so scents come out. This child needs to show he's a man.
Shay, a lot less talking and more chugging that glass of orange juice I gave you. You know, wash those burgers down, boy. But yeah, between that and the Caravan had the worst, and whoever designed those windows back in the day, the vans had the windows that would just pop out horizontally about 2 inches. Instead of windows that rolled down and you could open the whole window, it would just pop out just enough that you could like squeeze a nostril out, try to get fresh air as you're leaning against a window. It was a terrible design.
I don't get it. I mean, it's not aerodynamic. It's not like it needs a certain look where you're like, this is what I'm going to use to pick up the chicks,
right?
You know? So it doesn't make sense why it can't have like full features on it, unless like the guy who invented the van was just like, no, this is how we make it cheap. This is where we get our money.
Yeah.
We save money on window capabilities.
I still remember a trip coming back from the Poconos. Well, we were actually visiting my crazy uncle Bo, which I brought up a few months ago. It was me, my uncle, my dad, and my brother. And there's a fart that my uncle let out that is still in infamy today. Like, it is not a Christmas get-together or a holiday get-together with the family unless Uncle Ed's fart gets brought up. I mean, that man farted in that Caravan on, like, Route 80 in the Poconos, and it did not go away until, like, Central Jersey. That thing is still circling the earth somewhere. That's where I remember just trying to stick my nose out the Caravan windows and him like turning the heat up on purpose. Still hurts.
My brother was the king at that. Like, he was like well known at his job for being like, you didn't want to be stuck in a aisleway that didn't have an exit without Hank Berlew. Like, he worked for Sprint, and like they did cherry picker duty where you have to go up the shelves and all, and the guy would be like, I'm not going up there at Berlew, and all, what you have for dinner back at Berlew? He's like, nah, I didn't have anything. I swear. And then they would get up like 50 feet in the air. He's like, I had a little horseradish, and he would just start ripping it. Oh. And, like, guy would be like crying in the air and all, let me down, let me down.
So he planned it. So he had a planned attack.
My brother was just it's still his favorite joke, just to rip a fart. And like he was working with some guy. They were driving a 18-wheeler somewhere doing some work, and he ripped one, and it was so bad. Like, one of the guys like, pull over the truck, and he couldn't. No matter, they put down the windows, it wasn't enough. The guy jumped out of the truck it was still going like 5-10 miles an hour. That's how bad it was.
Oh man, I love farts. I mean, there is no like, there's no reason that we were designed to do like, it's something in our DNA, like that someone farts and we find it funny, or the person who farts finds it funny, or there's always a reaction to it. Like, there's no way that like knights and kings weren't farting back in the day having the same reaction, or cavemen sitting around the fire. I think it was a way of our bodies to entertain ourselves.
I mean, what's everybody who loves comedy loves like the secret fart, or just whether it's a loud one where it's the one where like it's silent but deadly and you just start laughing at like how raunchy it is. And sometimes the best fart is the one where you get the person that's like, oh, that's sick, that's how rude, and they just so overreact. The funny part is just watching them.
Oh yeah,
react to that fart.
And then there's other layers to it. Like, I remember catching grandma doing some farts, you know, like she tried to hide them, but you hear like grandma walking down the hallway, you hear a little like hysterical every single time. I'd be like, did you hear that? And talking to my brother laughing, and she'd be like, you know, doing like the cover up, like washing dishes, and like what? Like, no reaction to it. Like, I think that's when the human spirit starts dying, when you start to like cover up the hilarity of farts, and you're like too above laughing at that.
Now, do you know your most embarrassing fart story?
A fart I can't think of.
I can think of one that was in high school. That was for me and all. We were playing volleyball.
Yes.
Yeah, and he's just going back and forth, and I jumped up for a spike, and one just fell out.
Yes.
And it's like the... So you get, like, everybody going, and they're clearing the court, whatever. It wasn't that bad, like, smell. But I just remember, like, the next class, like, some dude describing the story to somebody else. And he's like, it was like he got shot up from a rug. He's like,
I was going to say, did you, see, it's still funny. Did you hit it on the takeoff, or was it like a mid-air fart?
As I was going up.
That's smart. You were using like,
You get down, and I guess you're clenching. Like, I didn't know it one was in there, but as you're jumping up and you're releasing stuff, it just goes, whoop, and...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, were you embarrassed at the time? Like, was it horrifying for you, or did you kind of embrace it?
Oh, it was embarrassing. Yeah. You know, I wasn't a popular kid at the time, so, like, anything that, like, brings you down a level, you're just like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, looking back, and now I'm just... I think what I remember most is just a guy just like pointing at me. It was like a rocket. He just pointed at me.
That guy's great.
I keep in touch with him. He's like a DJ in New Jersey. Shout out to Chris Zabando.
Can you message him like, hey, dude, you remember that fart I did in volleyball and see if he remembers?
I'm tempted. You're tempting me. Why would you, by the end of the show.
Yeah, why would you not be like, hey, man, what's up? You know, me and my buddy were just talking about embarrassing fartsters. You remember that rocket fart I did? Now, did you get the spike down? Did you fart and then make a contact?
I got the hit, and I think with everybody, like, running away, I got the point. So,
that's just good offense. That's all that is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I distracted the other team. You know, whatever works.
Now, like, I don't have, like, one particular fart story because I'm still the guy that will light up a room and chuckle. And, but I have several embarrassing dump stories for sure. I remember maybe 7 years ago I was working, and where I worked was there was no men's or women's bathroom, just one stall, one community bathroom, and I remember I was not feeling well, first off.
Mm-hmm. And
I lit this bathroom up so bad, and as I'm getting out of the bathroom, now the problem with if it was just a guy's bathroom, wouldn't care at all. I'd be like, whatever, don't go in there, buddy. But the problem is you took a risk taking a dump there because there could be someone just waiting. And I never wait outside. If I see the bathroom's occupied, I pretend I'm walking down the hallway. I try to time it like, oh, bathroom's open. I always try to seem like I'm moving down the hall. Even though I'm waiting, I'm not. I will never wait outside the door like a super.
Yeah, kid. Yeah. You're pretending you're like, oh, look at this poster. Let me explore this for a minute. Oh, what's on my watch? No, oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that's a quarter on the floor. Oh, thank God, I had to take a dump.
Yeah, I did. I used to do sometimes there was like a copy machine around the corner, and I would just pretend I was copying things till I heard the bathroom door open, and then I'd swoop in. I was lighting this bathroom up and come out, and the oldest, sweetest old lady in the whole building is just sitting there like this, like waiting to go in. I'm like, oh, God. She might have been pushing 80, like old. I'm like, I'm going to kill this woman. Like, there's a chance she doesn't come out. She goes,
that's when you're doing the walk around and pretending you're using the copier just to make sure she lived.
Got to go make a couple more copies. So she comes out. I'm like, okay. And I go on my way, and she goes out, and she was working with a buddy of mine, and I stop in to say hello to him. And they're all just like, as soon as I walk through the door, they just start busting out laughing. And I'm like, what? They're like, dude, that was you, wasn't it? I'm like, what? And they're like, oh, my God. They're like, you need to get checked. Like, even the old lady was ripping on me like, Jesus, Scott. Like, oh, my And then another time, I think I told this story, but this is a great one. Same building. I stopped there in the summer while they're on their construction. And I had to get something from my office or whatever. And I'm like, oh, gotta go. And I go to the bathroom. I'm going and I stand up, go to flush, and there's no, it's not going down. I'm like, oh no, oh no. So I just leave. I'm like, okay, well, that's fine. And I stop in the office and I talking to the secretary. I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, you know. I'm like, she's like, yeah, it stinks. Like, we had to drive over to the other building to go to the bathroom because the bathrooms are shut down for 3 weeks. I'm like, oh no. So that thing was probably marinating in the hot July sun for like 3 weeks in there.
Oh my God.
Yep.
And I know that feeling though, of like that smell. And all. I actually saw in my Facebook memories from my old job. You remember my favorite job?
Yes.
I had a Facebook post that said 90 degrees in the men's bathroom. Great job, building. That is the one room you want cooking right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bad, man. And this was not a turlet that had high water flow, very, very low water, like really low, like not a big basin to contribute into. Same toilet. One time I came back, was going, clogged the toilet, and the thing overflowed and started spilling into the hallway.
Oh, my God.
I've had it all, man. Like, fart stories, I don't really get embarrassed by, but when I'm clogging up toilets, it's still always a little embarrassing, man. That doesn't really go away.
Like, you're one of those, like, somebody's like, I was so embarrassed, I let one know. You're like, ha, 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 that's no man story. Let me tell you a manly story, young man. One time I lodged a log into a toilet and it was stuck there for 3 weeks.
Yeah, man. I don't know. But this
on
is
a side note, I feel bad for our guest coming up. I was just follow this conversation.
I was just gonna say this is a terrible segue into our guest.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is how it goes here. This is how, I mean, I'm sure Joe Bob Briggs last week was like, okay, when are they going to get to me? They're talking about humidifier water. I don't really get it to begin with.
He's like calling his agent. What kind of show did you put me on?
What like is this?
Like, they literally haven't stopped. I actually hit pause and somehow they're still talking about it right now.
I fast forwarded in 10-minute chunks and they're still going. Where am I on this episode? I always laugh when, like, we'll get the interview. Send the interview to the guest, you know, thanks so much for being on, and I'll see them post it and it'll be like, Mike's interview starts at 33 minutes in. it's like ignore all the horrible stuff in the beginning. But anyway, we are we have a very cool guest on. She is a singer songwriter, really a super talented girl. Her name is Maya Sharp, and her past is a lot of writing for some really famous musicians like Bonnie Raitt, Lisa Loeb, one of our favorites, Art Garfunkel, who maybe one day he'll come on the podcast.
One day.
But she is really stepping into her own career now with her own songs. And she has an album actually coming out this week, her solo album, Mercy Rising, on May 7th. And she's going to come on. And she's actually going to play us a couple tunes, too, from the album. And she's just a really talented musician. So let's get Maya Sharp on the show.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, Maya. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We are great. You know, we're chugging along here on the podcast, and
I have
to talk to Mike every week, so talking to you is a great relief, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you were sick of him.
Yeah, I mean, we've done like 350 of these, so yeah, I'm totally sick of him.
No way. You know, how long did it take to do 350? Are you doing a couple a day?
No, 7 years. No. We've been doing seven. 2014 was the first one, so.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
well, thanks for having me as, you know, 351. I appreciate it.
I think you're going to be 350 like 5 or something like that. Nice number, you know.
Yeah. Take it.
So Maya, where are we calling you at? Where do you live?
I am in Nashville, Tennessee. I did live in Los Angeles for years, but I just moved here at the beginning of 19. So
okay.
kind of a fresh resident.
But I feel like that's a good move for like what you do and the type of music you also make. I feel like you very much appreciated in that demographic.
Yeah, and you know, I've been coming here anywhere from like 3 to 6 times a year to write for like a week or two at a time. So I was already pretty familiar with it, but I was also ready for whatever the difference was going to be between being a traveling writer and being a resident. Right. So, And I'm still kind of learning that, because the last year we haven't really
done anything.
Had a clear view of what that is. So,
Well, you kind of segued into my first question, because there was a delay there for the, you hear us okay?
Are you there?
Yeah. So you kind of segued into my first question, which was, you know, you have wrote so many songs for other people, for yourself, and whatnot. When did you like? I'm guessing you've been playing music most of your life. When did people actually start to reach out to you to write music for them? And is that a hard thing to do? Or is it like, well, you know, I'm going to get my song played by, you know, heard by millions of people, so it's easy. Like, what is the dynamic with that?
Yeah, that second thing about, hey, I'm just going to go get my songs heard. You know, by millions of people. I have never experienced that. It's always been a challenge.
Right.
The internet's a little unstable. Are you guys hearing me okay? Is it all right?
We're hearing you, but everyone's
doing good.
Yeah. I think you're back
now. We're
kind
of freezing on and off. Okay. And I can't really recall any like particular time or session or publishing deal or label deal, because I've had a few of each along the way where it felt like, okay, now I'm the one that everybody's going to be asking for. It felt like every experience was its own thing. And every time I've had a song recorded by, you know, by another artist, it really does have its own story around it. Like sometimes I'm writing with the artist. Sometimes it was like old school publishing deal and my publisher just hit the street and found a home for it.
Huh.
Sometimes it was like on one of my albums and somebody heard it on the radio. It's really like had their own little journeys every time. Which is fine. You know, I'm all for the journey. But I've never felt that like, okay, I have arrived. Everybody wants me now, you know, but it's probably kept me hungry. So I don't know. That's okay.
And when you started off, or what I've researched, you were more of an instrumental performer and writer on instruments. What kind of take us through what it takes to turn from that into like writing like song lyrics? Is it just as simple as, oh, I think this sounds pretty, and start writing it down? Or were you like trying to like research best ways of doing it, or figuring out your style?
How to be awesome.
Interesting question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that one before, because I was a saxophone player primarily early on, like when I first thought that, or when I first knew, I should say, that I was going to do music professionally. I thought I was going to be a saxophone player, so I went to college for that. And about halfway through college, so this is a while ago, this is super early in the arc of all of this, I realized that as much as I love to play saxophone and I like to hunker down with my jazz albums and learn my Coltrane solos, it's not really the heart of me. It's not like where my true influences are. You know, I grew up listening to Bonnie Raitt and Paul Simon and Ricky Lee Jones and Joni Mitchell and Jackson Browne and that. So I was like, okay, you know, let's see if I can translate what I've learned on the instrument, what I learned in school, what I've learned from all the listening. Let's see if I can feed that into this new love and new pursuit, really, of trying to write songs like that. And I mean, I'm pretty sure the first 50 or so sucked. And then it started to feel like, okay, I think I'm onto something. I think I can get the thoughts and the theory That's what we've been doing with the podcast.
I
don't remember a process.
The first 300 episodes sucked. The last 50, we're hitting our stride. Yeah,
we know it's going to turn around eventually. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the first 354 sucked, but 355, man. That's right.
See, I like your confidence already.
There we go. All right.
You have a lot of belief in us that we don't.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because you're...
So it was really just the hunkering down and doing it. Sorry, go.
No. You're touching on something like... I know that you've been doing something really interesting during the pandemic, and we've had a lot of artists on this show, especially in the last year. And it's been cool because it's kind of changed our dynamic on the interview on being like, hey, you did this, and this. You're touring. You gotta... A lot of artists were like, how have you survived during the pandemic? And some have kind of shut down and like they can't get creative. Some have said it's been the most creative time of their artistic experience. And I keep saying after this is over officially, we're going to get a lot of great music, I think, from a ton of artists. But how have you kind of now coming from a writer's perspective, you do live performance too, but someone who's written for so many great artists, like, has this been like an opportunity to almost double down, or did you take a different direction?
Well, I mean, over the last year, this whole kind of challenging having to adapt to something new every week year that we've had, it's been kind of a three bears thing for me. Like, at first I was like not feeling creative at all. And I actually, I got the virus pretty early on. I got it March of 2020.
Wow. Okay.
You know, before like we even really knew that it was here and that we should be wearing masks and all of that stuff. A tornado came through my neighborhood in Nashville. And of course the following week there's like, you know, all of these benefit shows. So we're all going out and hugging it out.
Right.
And like, just, there's like, 1,000 of us in a, you know, a 250 capacity room, because everybody's trying to show up to help their neighbors. And like, it was more crowded. I was around more people in that week than I ever remember being. And of course, a week later on the 10th of March, I woke up with a sinus infection that ended up to be the virus. So that first... And that took me about a month to get over that. So after that, it was, I'm not really feeling like learning a language or reading all the books on my bookshelf or, you know, learning, learning how to garden or, you know, like all those like kind of overboard things that some people were doing. And I'm totally happy for them for that. But I wasn't really finding the energy for that. It took me a minute. But then once the creative juices started to kick in again, which was maybe a couple months later. So for those first 2 months after I felt okay again physically, it was like a lot of house stuff because I had just moved. It's like, okay, this is my opportunity to paint or whatever. And then it was like, okay, I really need to like use this time that I have never really had before, and who knows when I'm gonna have it again, and let's see if I can create something. So I, right in June of 2020, I got, I'm sure you've talked to other artists who are doing the Patreon thing, right?
Yes.
Or no?
Okay. Yes. Yep. Definitely. Yep.
Yeah. So that kicked in this other level of like, okay, I'm going to set this up where I have to be accountable. Like I need to deliver a new song a month. I'm going to do this online show every month. I'm going to write a custom song for the people who pay for that. I'm going to do online workshops, all that stuff. So I kind of threw my hat over the wall, like, okay, you really need to get your ass in gear and do this. And that was super inspiring. So that kind of got it all flowing again. And then to finish answering the question, I've been writing for an organization called Songwriting with Soldiers for the last 4 years. And we started dropping into this program called the Warrior Path which is PATHH, Progressive and Alternative Training for Healing Heroes. So we started going out again, even during the pandemic. And I've been doing that like twice a month for probably 6 months now, where I go out all over the country. I drive to these places and I sit down with a group of veterans, anywhere from 4 to 8 of them. And they share whatever stories they want to share. And I write a song of their stories. And I do it in 2 hours, which sounds totally impossible. And even just saying that right now, it sounds impossible. But they're so open and raw and real. And it's just such a filling up and exhausting and awesome experience that it works. So I've been spending a lot of time doing that too.
I love that you're like, yeah, I got hit by a tornado and I got corona, so I was lazy for 2 months. No, it's okay.
Right. Don't forget you moved, Scott. That's a pain in the butt to begin with without the tornado and the COVID.
Now, Maya, I think this is...
Yeah, like, it was a lot.
I know you were going to you were gonna perform songs for us, so I thought maybe that would be a good question to segue if there's any songs that you have that maybe you wrote with Songwriting with Soldiers. If you would like to perform one now, that would be good, and we can come back to some questions, or it's up to you.
Oh, wow. The Songwriting with Soldiers ones, I don't think I have those. Oh. My fingertip now. Cause I'm doing that. It's like, it's so fast and furious. If I'd worked it up, I could have done that.
Oh,
but
cool.
I do have a song that totally relates to this, to our conversation.
Absolutely.
It's from the album. Is that okay?
Yeah. What is it called?
Things to Fix.
Things to Fix. So, I think this is a perfect opportunity to hear a tune, come back, ask some questions. We'll hear a tune later. So this is cool. So Maya Sharp, this is called Things to Fix. It's going to be much better than Mike's song that he performed right before this.
I didn't hear that. I want to hear that.
You will never hear it.
Whoop, there it is. Hit me.
Go ahead,
there it
Maya.
Was. So, yeah, I mean, relating to what we were just talking about, this is the list of things that I occupied myself with to keep my mind off of the big thing that I really should have been focusing on. And in this case, it wasn't exactly what we were just talking about. This was things that I should have said that I didn't, and things that I wish I had, things that I said that I wish I hadn't. At the end of this, I'm just going to add this on the pile. My marriage of 21 years ended at the end of 2018, right before I moved to Nashville. So it was like, you're single for the first time in 21 years. And, oh, by the way, here's a tornado. Oh, and just how about a side of COVID, you know?
I've been there in some way, so I'm definitely interested to hear the song. So,
okay. Well, here it is. This is Things to Fix. The table leg, the back door latch, the cabinet with the worn out catch, the picture frame that doesn't hold a nail. There's water underneath the floor. That window won't quite shut no more. And the middle drawer is riding off the rail. Oh, there ain't enough hours in the day to patch it up and dust it off and make it all okay. What I should have said and what I should have done. Yeah, I keep skipping over number one on my list of things to fix. I'm gonna give these faded walls a coat, clean around that folded note, and finally go out and get a ring for that key that I can never find. You blame it on my drifting mind. I can't seem to hold on to anything. Well, I can work on something till it shines like new, I could never bring myself to shine for you. What I should have said and what I should have done. Yeah, I keep skipping over number one on my list of things to fix. Oh, every time the second hand ticks, I think of something else I might have missed. Getting longer, but I'm running out of breath, and I can't face it yet. What I should have said, what I should have done. Holding there at number one on my list of things to fix.
All right. That's fantastic. That really had a, one, I love the lyrics because I could relate to them. And two, that had like a, to me, it had like a Chris Stapleton vibe to it. Like it had a real.
I'll take that.
Yeah. It definitely had like I could picture him singing that with you, you know, like he always has his wife, you know, kind of singing with him.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys can do a duet on that. So I surely hope that maybe that'll become a thing one day. But nice job.
Well, thank you very much.
So I guess my question from there is, you've written songs for so many artists, like just from the list I'm looking at, Bonnie Raitt, Cher, The Chicks, Terry Clark, Lisa Loeb, all that. Do you try to write to a certain person or a certain genre, or do you just write and whatever your song is becomes something they would be interested? Like, do you write like with somebody in mind, or do you just go, hey, I'm putting this song out there, and if you like it, you know, we can talk.
Right. Well, I definitely tried the first way for a while, particularly when there was a couple of publishing deals where they were like, okay, we're writing for this person now and they're looking for this. And I really tried doing that with a writer in mind, or sorry, with the artist in mind. And those never, ever landed. But the second way that she just said, where I just wrote something that, you know, I felt a connection to it. Those are the ones that have found homes elsewhere. And they also go, you know, like I said earlier, they kind of all have their own path. Like for the Bonnie song, two of them were because my co-writer already had an in with her, and she was listening to what he was writing. And then once I was on her radar, then the third song snuck in there because she saw my name there and she listened there. The Lisa Loeb song is writing with her. Cher was just like, again, my co-writer's publisher got that. For The Chicks, my publisher got that. Every one of them has a different story, and every one of them, most of them are a surprise for which songs they chose. So I learned a number of years ago to just stop thinking about that while I'm writing. It really just kind of gets in the way, you know, of the process. It kind of misinforms the process. Like, you might as well just write something that you feel. If the hair on your arm is standing up, it has a better chance of, you know, evoking that reaction in some other human, and not like just because you thought you fit a pitch sheet, you know?
Yeah. Mike's probably sick of this question, but I am fascinated by comics and writers and their writing process. Are you a pen to paper kind of girl, or are you a jam it out in chords first and then find lyrics, or do you sing blah 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 over it and then plug in lyrics? Like, what is your process?
Well, it's been kind of every which way through the years, but the last probably 5 years, it's been lyric forward. Like, I sit down and write a song after I have a nugget of something, after I have a seed of even just one line, anywhere up to like a verse or two, where I feel like I've really captured the concept, and now I can sit down and find whatever the chords and the melody want to be. But I lately, and I think this is going to be my MO from now on, because it feels right. Like, I'm the most inspired to write a song if I feel like I have a lyric idea that is really cool. So that's where I start.
Because that song, I knew what you were talking about within the first 30 seconds of the song. So I give you credit for that. Like, right away, I knew what you were saying. So you nailed it with the lyrics.
Well, thank you. Well, I brought Things to Fix, and I think it was a big piece of the first verse to a co-writing session. Noah Guthrie, who is this great singer-songwriter, he lives in South Carolina, killer voice, It was our first writing session together. He was coming through Nashville, and I just had this little scene. I was like, okay, so this is what's going on. You know, there's this huge thing that is plaguing me. But in the meantime, my house is as clean as it's ever been. I'm like, I'm avoiding it like the plague. But hey, the table leg's fixed and the window works, right. You know? So, right. So yeah, so we fleshed that out.
Now, with all the artists that you listed, I know that you're a big Bonnie Raitt fan. You were inspired by her. She performed one of your songs. You got to tour with her. I'm kind of curious about when you're inspired by somebody, that first kind of meeting, were you like nervous? Were you trying to do small talk? Were you calling her like Mrs. Raitt or something like that?
Yo, what up, B-Raitt? What up, B-Raitt?
What up? Well, okay. I am happy to report she is just the coolest, most earthy. You probably feel like you already know her because her music is just so like already in you. And when I met her, she was all of that. So she preemptively got rid of any of that stuff that probably would have happened if she hadn't been waiting in the lobby of the studio. So she called me to ask if I would recreate some of the harmonies that I had on my versions of the songs.
Wow.
Or her version. I know. So it's already like, I'm already like a little fetal in the corner, you know, like rocking back and forth, like, holy crap, what's happening? Okay. So I walk in the studio door. This is in Los Angeles. She's in the lobby. She's the only one in the lobby. I walk in. She spins around, throws her arms in the air and says, Maya, it's so great to meet you. And that was like, we've been really good friends ever since. That's she just awesome. Immediately dispelled any like, oh my God, should I be formal? What am I supposed to be? We were just like hugging it out in the first 5 seconds.
That's amazing.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You know, you always have that. They always tell you don't meet your heroes. You know, you'll be, like,
it's a risk.
We've had a couple on this podcast where one went real weird in one way, and then one definitely went amazingly. So we've had a couple here.
Yeah, I've been extremely fortunate. The people that I've met that I've loved for years, I meet them, and I so far on some wood, it's awesome. All gone well. Yeah.
So you have a new solo album. Yes. which is Maya Sharp, mm-hmm. called Mercy Rising, coming out on May 7th.
Yes.
And I'm assuming it's going to be on all streaming platforms, Spotify and all that stuff.
Yep. And physical too.
And I was able to listen to a couple songs and whatnot. So I figured this would be a good segue. Can you play us something off the new album?
Well, that last song that I just played was off of the new album also.
Right.
And then, I mean,
or you can play like, anything you want. It doesn't matter. Yeah. But.
Well, no, I'm in the new album mode for sure. Bluesy, plaintive. What do you think?
Let's go bluesy. Let's go bluesy.
That sounds interesting. Yeah.
Was that the one? I think it was
Junkyard Dog.
Junkyard Dog is cool. I think I also liked Backburner was one of them that I.
Oh, Backburner. Yeah.
Pick one. It's all you.
Yeah, why don't I do that one? Backburner. Right. That's going to be the next single.
That's the third song, right? Third song on the album.
Yeah. Yeah, this one's the next single. Be out.
All right, Mike, while she's tuning, you sing your song that you also entitled Backburner. Go ahead.
I see skies green, red roses too. I forgot the rest of the lyrics. That's usual for Mike Berlew.
Back burner.
I think to myself, I should really shut up now.
I totally thought it was going to be a song about like how you fell asleep at the beach and your back got really burned or something.
Ah, you get me. You get me.
That was his first concept album. It didn't sell too well.
That's I'm so surprised.
Maya Sharp.
Plenty of times.
Maya Sharp with Back Burner off her new album, Mercy Rising.
I tried to put you on the back burner, let you simmer on low. While I tended to the party and the overflow, so you wouldn't boil over, I'd give a little stir, maybe take a little taste just to make sure. It's a hell of a way to say turn the flame up higher. When I put you on the back burner, you set the place on fire.
So good.
Thank you. The sound of four hands clapping. Amazing.
It's more than we've ever heard. It's more than we usually get one hand, you know. It's
out of curiosity, as you perform for our show tonight, like, what is your preferred venue? Do you like small bar, like an outdoor setting, a stadium?
A stadium, what? Yeah. Yeah, let me compare all the stadiums I've played with. Actually, I love the smaller kind of listening room, like 100 to 300. Yep. You know, even like the small like performing arts centers where it really is people are there to listen to the music, but it's not too large. Although I will confess that part of me love, I don't know that I prefer, but I really love to open for other artists. I love to be the one on the stage that they haven't heard of. Like, I have to win them over now.
That's cool. Yeah.
There's something about that. And it's like this smart strike kind of short set, maybe like a 45 minute set. And you walk out and you're like, you don't know me from fucking Eve, yep. But I'm about to.
I could relate to that. Like, comedy wise, yeah. Like, I love like featuring because like one, I get to watch the headliner. So if I bomb, they gotta go figure it out. And mm-hmm. And two, like I love that like after set having a beer with the other comics and relaxing and watching the show. Like I've closed a couple times in my life and I'm like, oh, the show's over. Like this kind of stinks. There's no one here. Like as far as the artists, they've all right. left or they're talking to their boyfriends or on their way home. So I could relate to that too. And like comedy wise, I always thought that like 100 to 150 people is like the sweet spot. Like where you're not getting
really
a bunch of weirdos like interrupting and all that. So, mm-hmm. Maya, I really love your music. And you've been a really amazing guest. If people want to check you out or look for the album or see what's going on in your world after they hear this interview, what's the best place for them to go?
The quickest kind of all encompassing way is just to go to my website, which is mayasharp.com, and that's M-A-I-A sharp like a cheese without an E.
Sharp like a cheese.
I could say like a knife, but I feel like I'm more like a cheese. So. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, yeah. So that's the place you can find the links to everything else, you know, Instagram and Twitter, Facebook, you know, Patreon, you know, how to stream and download, where to find the physical. I will have CDs available on May 7th, and vinyl is on the way, although I'm sure you've probably already heard this.
Backlogged.
Vinyl production is very backlogged, yeah, but it's going to come out probably within 4 weeks of,
that's awesome.
of the album release. It's definitely happening now. And once you go vinyl, even though it is not a fiscally responsible choice to press vinyl, but I'm just hooked. I have to do
it.
It's
great.
You know?
It's great.
I know. It's so cool. It's warmer. You hold it in your hand.
Tangible. It's tangible. Oh, it's I love it.
Just hearing that first scratch as it goes on to the vinyl is...
So no, Maya, I know I asked you, we asked for two songs, but would you play us out a song on the way out? Like, I would love to hear one more.
Sure.
Anything. Right, well, this is dealer's choice. Whatever you want. Maya Sharp album coming out May 7th. Mercy Rising. Check her out. Obviously, she's awesome. So please go check out her album. And Maya, if you want to take us out with some music, that would be really cool.
Well, how about I play? This is the first single. It's called Whatever We Are.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Anytime you got something going on, come on back, please.
Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Oh man, you're going to regret saying that. Never again, or just not today. First of our kind, or the oldest cliche. Right down the middle, or missed it by far. I love you, whatever we are. Kick in the habit, or up in the dose. Two airplanes flying uncomfortably close. Leftover light from a long gone star. I love you, whatever we are. We've been it all. I still don't have a clue what you are. It's breaking my heart. Loving someone forever, whatever we are. Stuck in the memories, we're trying to move on. Changing the station, we're singing along. In the back of my car. Oh, I love you, whatever we are. I'm not gonna stop when it puts up a fight. I'll just learn how to see you in another new light. love you forever, whatever we are.
All right. Maya Sharp. Thank you so much, Maya. Please stay safe out there. Thank you so much for your time. We really enjoyed it. Tremendous stuff, and we hope to have you on again when you got new music.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, too. You guys be safe, too.
All right, Maya Sharp. Really awesome guest. Go check out her album this week. If you're listening this week, it comes out on, what's the 7th, Mike? The 7th is a... It's Friday.
So it's a Friday.
Yep. So it comes out on Friday. So go check her out. Super cool guest. She really classed the show up immediately as soon as she came onto the show. It was in the toilet, if you will, prior to the interview.
Yeah, she was probably like listening to the episode, saying, "Oh, this is cute," like talking about Halloween candy and stuff like that. This is an adorable show. And then just left turn. Yeah. She's like, "Well, that show's done with."
Sorry, Maya. Maya won't be coming next time we record. Oh, you got a new album coming out. Want to come on and promote it? No, we're gonna pass on that. But
yeah, we feel you still have more fart stories to talk about, so we're gonna hold on to the risk, if you will.
Did you guys talk about farts with with Sam or John Walsh? Is that your MO?
Yeah. I mean, now that you listen to the episode, seriously, Art Garfunkel. How do we get him on the show again?
And does he have any embarrassing poop stories? Is that that would be a great podcast? Where you bring on these amazing guests, but you only bring them on to tell their most embarrassing poop story, like. Can you imagine going back through our whole catalog of guests? Like, Mark Summers from Double Dare is coming on the podcast. Mark, tell us your most embarrassing. Oh, man, what a great idea.
That'd be great. And I just, like, yeah, one night I was up there and Paul just turned to me. He's like, dude, I got to try to, I could taste that. I'm trying to sing here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We were singing The Sounds of Silence and I ripped one. And it was ironic.
Yeah, right in the middle of a bridge over troubled water. I was in trouble immediately. anyway, Maya Sharp.
Seriously, Art Garfunkel, come on our show. Yeah,
Maya Sharp, everybody. Go check her out. What you got, Mike?
Scott, did you hear about this guy who got hundreds of people together to battle to determine the ultimate Josh?
Funny you say that, Mike. I'm looking at my notes, and on my notes it says the Josh battle.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have common thread here. No, so for those who don't know, a gentleman by the name of Josh basically hit up every Josh he could get on Facebook and basically said, we're gonna have a tournament and the winner keeps their name. So he put it 1 year out, and they had thousands of people named Josh in a pool noodle fight in Nebraska.
That's amazing.
Like, off the bat, how many of these people really sat back and said, man, do I really want to travel to Nebraska for this? That's my first thought.
Right away, I'm thinking, if someone hits me up with that kind of engine, these are the things that are wonderful about the internet and social media, that a guy can pull this kind of massive event off that is so ridiculous. Like, if someone messaged me and was like, hey, we're going to have a Scott Brennan Royal Rumble, and it's in, it's in Wyoming, I might be, just for the story and the experience, I might be trying to find a way to make it out to it.
Like, you gotta figure some of these guys had to, like, talk to their wives and, like, justify, all right, why are we going to Nebraska in the middle of the summer again? And no, you don't understand. This guy don't know who has my name says we are all going to battle for the right for the name. And I got to do this. I got to meet all the Joshes in the world.
Yeah, it's I don't know. And imagine how much explaining he had to do. just not to one person. Like, if you got one person to agree, I would be like, that's awesome. That's hysterical. But when you start getting hundreds of people to agree to come on out, this is like an amazing feat.
Yeah, this was a huge event. Like, literally, it's not even like the hundreds of Josh's. You can tell there's probably a good 400 or 500 people from the YouTube video I'm looking of this. Like, this dude had to rent a park to make this happen. That's insane.
Now, I wonder if anybody actually lost and was like, okay, I'm no longer Josh. Like, I'm going to stick to the rules and go change my name after this.
You have failed. You will now be known as Jimmy.
Yeah, I mean, there's like everybody dressed up as Star Wars characters and superheroes. Yeah. So, I don't know, man. It's just an amazing. I'm a little upset, though, how they let the little guy win.
I mean, it's all. I mean, if you're going to do something that insane, the best way to end it is a good story. Now, like, that kid is going to have a story for years where, like, people are like, no way that freaking happened. You know? That is. He gave it to a four or five-year-old.
Yeah.
So this event is going to go be told for years and years. This kid has just a normal sized life. It's just going to expand all the people who are aware of this story. So
if you got a message saying finding all the Burlus from around the world, including the old Buckaloos, like they're going to go back another generation and find all the origins. And you had to, battle it out, maybe had a triathlon or just a real competition. You're telling me you wouldn't want to go join?
Well, like, one of the reasons I brought this up was kind of like thinking of, like, if he was literal about like a fight to the death for this and we go by name, like, I would be screwed with Michaels. I would have no prayer. Like, I'm looking through, like, Michael Strahan, Mike Tyson, Michael Jordan, Michael Phelps, Mike Ditka in 80 could probably whoop my rear end in. Michael Vick.
Yeah.
I would be
Michael,
absolutely.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan's competitive. Like, I could see if, like, a purge happened, Michael Jordan just, like, murdering 700 people to prove a point.
Yeah, he's a guy you want on your side. You want that Michael on your team. He's a guy that would compete and probably gamble heavy on it. I could see Michael Jordan kicking a kid in the face, no problem, to win that.
Easily. Like, if you listen to The Last Dance, the dude would, like, cheat at cards just to win, like, $1,000 when he's got, like, $3
billion. Yeah.
So he would definitely just, like, slice a man's throat just for the title, easily.
Yeah, well.
Like, I was looking at your name, Scott's, there's not a ton of big names I could see in there. Like, for what I got, Scott Stevens, Scott Hall, Scott Steiner, Scottie Pippen, Scott Holtzman from the UFC.
Dude, you just threw out five Scots that would absolutely rip me up to shreds.
Yeah, but, like, I got, like, hundreds of ones that would, like, destroy. It'd be like a zombie movie where they just, like, engulf me and just, like, rip me apart.
Can,
like,
you imagine me trying to defend myself against Scott Steiner?
I mean, I would pay to see that. I mean, I would probably pay that over the Mayfield-Logan Paul fight, but...
Mayweather. Not Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. But I'm watching the draft, sorry.
Yeah. So. I wouldn't put it past boxing is now the Wild West. Literally anyone can fight each other.
I think so. No, I think we're going back to the days when Manute Bol was fighting William the Refrigerator Perry. It's just like nobody cares about real boxing anymore. It's just like, no, let's get the freak show going.
Dude, think about it. You've had the Jake Paul ones, obviously. You have the Mountain from Game of Thrones. He's boxing Eddie Hall, the other world's strongest man. They're having a boxing exhibition. Anderson Silva is boxing. We had Canseco boxing a couple months ago where he took a dive.
Mm-hmm.
It's endless.
Hornswoggle, he just had a fight.
Yeah. I mean, I give credit to these guys because you know what? You don't need these major promoters and labels, et cetera, to like go put on an event and make your money. All power to them, because if they're getting enough interest, like Jake Paul is obnoxious, obviously, and he's brilliant at the same time because he's just playing the villain, man. He's just, every single person wants to watch those fights to see him lose, to see that train get stopped. So if he picks his, now the kid can box, Now we're not talking professional level yet, but if the kid's committed to box, he's a big kid. He's an athletic looking guy. And if he's training every day, I mean, it's not like the kid has a job. He's a YouTuber. He can, he can commit his life to training. And if he picks his opponents correctly, if he really picks them correctly, like Ben Askren was a guy coming off a hip surgery, not a striker, whether that fight was real or not, looked a little suspect to me. The fall was, he was really stiff and then got up in 2 seconds. Usually when you get starched like that, you're starched on the ground. You're not moving for a few minutes or a minute or so, and then you start getting up. A little suspect to me, a guy who's been a world championship level is getting punched in the face. Guy's won belts. He was an Olympian. One punch, a little questionable to me, but they sold millions of pay-per-views on that disaster that is Triller. But if he picks his opponents correctly, so he gets in the next level guy that maybe could strike a little bit, but he has a chance. And if he can get 4, 5, 6 wins under his belt, his momentum is just going to keep rolling. People are going to hate him more and more and just keep calling for, like, you know, Beast to go beat him down. So he's making his money, man.
Yeah, it's like what Connor did. I mean, everybody went into it. It's like, I mean, you're a great fighter, but you don't have true boxing skills. But he went into it just laughing. It's like, it's not the first time I got my face caved in for some money, you know, and he made buku bucks, and now it was it De La Hoya he's trying to arrange a fight with? No, I mean, he's raking up money, and his body's probably not taking the same amount of abuse as, like, a UFC fight. So.
Yeah, I mean, and, yeah, you're going into these fights. Yeah, is it dangerous to get hit in the head like that? Of course. But like you said, it's not. You're not getting kicked. You're not getting mauled. Boxing fight tends to end a lot quicker, especially, but you saw how early that one got called. I think this isn't going anywhere. These I'm just going to call them dream matchups because I don't have a turn or, you know, carnival-like atmosphere. And, I mean, look at it. When we went out for that Conor fight, that was a fantastic night out. That was just an event to be part of. It was silly. You know, it didn't make much sense. But, and even if they planned that, because nothing in boxing seems real or on the up and up. But, you know, he competed for, like, the first 4 rounds, Conor looked like he was in it, and you're like, wow. And then, you know, Mayweather, who is arguably the best boxer of all time, just took over. But
yeah, if you want to basically know how long the fight with Paul is going to last, just wait until Mayweather puts in his bet. Because that's literally what he tried to do. Nobody would take the bet, but he basically was betting for the 7th round, and he, second that 7th round hit, it's like, all right, here we go. Time to go to school.
That certainly could be it. But I remember that just being a really, really fun night. So, I don't know. I'm all for absolutely. It. If Connor wants to do it again. If, I don't know, Mayweather does intrigue me, like, because he's so good. I don't know. I have nothing against it because it's just, there's so much other crap on TV that people can be upset about. I mean, we scroll through our phones all day long and watch garbage on Instagram and Facebook. How is this any different? It's just another thing behind a paywall to make some money.
So now that we know there's money in it, Scott, the Verbal Shenanigans Boxing League.
Yep.
Which one of our former guests are you challenging tonight?
Calling out?
Like, it's got to be like a real battle. Like, don't be saying,
like, I can't call out Maya Sharp because I feel like I have a chance there.
I feel she would whoop you just for the fact that her beautiful songs are ruined by our fart talk earlier.
Fart talk. all right. How about instead of me calling someone out, throw a couple at me and I'll tell you if I think I had a legit chance of surviving.
Let's see. Let's
you know, I do hit the heavy bag once a week.
Ooh. Well, let's say like an athlete. Let's do Trent Dilfer.
I'm dead. Not a chance. That's, dude, that's professional. Like, that's professional athlete. They got strength that, like, we don't possess. Like, the average Joe doesn't possess. He's a big guy, played in the NFL. He's taking way harder hits than I could ever deal out. So I'm going no chance against Trent Dilfer.
No chance? Okay. I mean,
also, please don't tweet out like, hey, Trent Dilfer, Scott wants to fight you. And then before you know it, I'm in some kind of scenario where you forge my signature. And before you know it, I'm flying off to to Indiana in some bar parking lot to take on somebody.
Okay. How about former cop Tom Bernie?
No. Tom would wipe the floor with me. He knows all sorts of like takedown techniques, and he's seen real action in his life. I've gotten like a couple shoving matches on the schoolyard.
Okay. Let's say neck Irony Singleton.
No. Big dude. Big dude, kinda jacked. He looks like he might train. Nope, not messing with that dude.
We got to start somewhere where you'll take a fight. How about Chris Ballou?
All right. The lead singer of the President of the United States of America, or as I tweeted, the lead singer of the Spin Doctors.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what, Casper Baby Pants? I think I could rough him up for a couple rounds.
That'd be entertaining. I mean, like he would have to come out as Casper Baby Pants.
So
like,
he's singing children's like songs.
Yeah, have a children's song playing as he's coming out in the robe, like something where like you'll kind of relax, but at the end of the day, I still feel like that might be interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll take him on. I'll take him on. All right, so we set that fight up. What about you? Let me throw a couple at you. See if you if you think you could hold your own against some of these guys. Could you take on Matt Pinfield?
I mean, he's kind of skinny right now. I think I could.
Okay.
Like, no offense to Matt and all, great interview. Like, it was one of the coolest interviews I thought, where it was like a laid back conversation. But he definitely lost some pounds where, like, if we're talking like Matt Pinfield MTV days, I think that would be interesting. I would probably still go for it, but I could see him giving me some business. But Matt Pinfield today, I think I could take him.
I'm sorry, hold on, I'm finishing this tweet. Hey, Matt Pinfield, would you be
telling me we couldn't get an audience if we told our audience, by the way, we're punching Matt Pinfield in the
this
face
might
tonight.
Be the only way we can get an audience, you know what I mean?
I don't know. Those fart talks, I think, are really going to take us up to the Rogan level.
Some undercard matches would be cool. We could have Tom Wopat versus John Snyder. Have the Duke boys battle it out. I mean, that's a headlining match right there.
I would give it to Snyder, I think. He's got he's like 10 years younger. He seems more in shape right now. I don't know. When looking in pictures, I could be wrong, but I would probably put my money on Snyder.
What about John Walsh versus Callahan? Father versus son.
Something about John Walsh. Like, if you told me, could you beat up John Walsh? I'd be kind of like, in some ways, I don't think I can. Like,
no.
He just got that look where it's, I think they kind of call it farmer strong, where you look at him, you're like, nah, this will be easy, and it'll just, like, the first punch comes in, and you're like, what the hell was that?
Now, I will tell you, there's a legit chance of one person we could probably get to fight. In fact, he's been rumored in fights before. I think if we tweeted enough and really contact, we can get Lenny Dykstra in a fight.
I don't even think we have to pay him. Like, I think... Like,
we like the Always Sunny episode with Roddy Piper. We'll pay him with a bucket of walnuts.
Like, I just get a feeling you're just like, hey, if I give you a ham sandwich, will you punch Scott in the ring? He'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Sounds like something.
I feel like I could take Lenny Dykstra. Here's why. Lenny Dykstra has about 30 years of hard drug and alcohol abuse. Like, I feel like he's a shell of nails, you know?
Yeah, but I got a feeling he's got that kind of like when you look at a homeless person, you kind of like, I don't want to mess with them. Like just that something where you like, I know if I hit a trigger, like
that crazy
brain goes in a certain spot, he's going to go in a certain spot and like, he might start like biting.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He's got like that Nate Diaz zombie like quality to him where he's just going to keep coming forward. Like you're going to keep hitting him in the face and nothing's going to happen. Yeah.
You'll be like hitting him with a 2x4 and you're like, how are you still alive?
Especially like if he did like a bunch of meth or something before the fight, like where nothing's affecting him. You're right. I take that back. Lenny Dykstra would probably win. Do you think you could take Sharon Alexander, the world's largest sportswoman?
That's a thinker. That's a thinker right there.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want to do it because she's a lovely lady, and I know you're still in love with her.
I was just going to say, you bite your tongue here.
And like she's lost a few pounds. So like the last time we had her on, she talked about she lost quite a few bit of weight. So I would say in her prime, I don't think I could.
No. She might be better now. She might be a little bit more agile.
It all depends, and all. I mean, how she moves around and everything.
You got to remember, she's got that heavy woman strength too, carrying around like 400 pounds. The strength from carrying around 400 pounds doesn't go away. The weight does, but that strength is still there.
Plus, she's so sweet. You got a feeling she's got that switch right there where it's like, it might be cute and we're like playing around and maybe like, oh, I'm so sorry, Sharon. And then just like the turn happens.
Yeah.
And like she just goes ballistic. So
I agree. Well, we got some shenanigans fights to line up. Like I said, I think if we get you and Matt Pinfield in the co-main event with me and Chris Ballew, I think we're onto something. I think we can get at least 100 pay-per-view buys right there.
Yeah, we'll call it celebrity boxing with an asterisk by saying only half the people are celebrities.
Or spell celebrity wrong or something.
Well, celebrity boxing subjects change.
With like a huge like little write up underneath and small.
A few of them consider themselves celebrities.
Mike, it's time to roll on out of here. Anything to promote before we skedaddle?
I'm gonna promote a local brewery down here, one that's definitely on my bucket list to go visit, Pontu Brewing. It's in Sandy Springs, Georgia. It's pretty well known for their amazing flavors. Tonight, Scott, I am enjoying Honorary Girl Scout Simone Nut Cookie. It's a stout with coconut and lactose. It's absolutely delicious. I had their great pumpkin spice beer during pumpkin spice whatever. Every beer that they put out is just like spot on. It's something I literally have to make a special trip just to go see them. I consider them the Tired Hands of Georgia. So, as you know, Tired Hands is amazing. And if you're in Georgia, you know Pontoon brings some great stuff. So check out Pontoon Brewing in Sandy Springs, Georgia, or wherever your local brewery are sold.
On the pontoon. I'm going to promote the Verbal Shenanigans. Let's try it again. The Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Night at Tap House 15 in New Jersey, in Jefferson, New Jersey. It's been over a year. Finally back, we're very excited. We're doing something different. There is a prefixed menu, so it's a $45 prefixed menu. You get appetizers. You can choose from smoked wings, tuna tartare, shrimp cocktail, filet mignon meatballs, bacon-wrapped jalapeno peppers. Your entrees, filet mignon, short rib ravioli, shrimp and grips, crab cakes, dessert, chocolate lava cake, and cake pop trio. And if you've ever been there, you know their food is slamming, their beer is slamming, and the comedy show will be a great one with our good friend Mike Burton headlining. So at $45, very limited seating due to COVID restrictions, so we're keeping it socially distant. So please come on out. Very excited to be back. It's been a long time coming. So other than that, guys, please check us out on the BS Podcast Network, on all your podcast listening platforms, various internet radio stations. Just Google us and find different ways to listen to us. And leave a review if you like it. I want to thank Maya Sharp for coming on. That's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
And if any of my former high schoolers are out there who wants to share the story of me farting, please contact Verbal Shenanigans.
Thank you. Please contact us.